Welcome to the CineScare podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And Joe, tonight, we have a theme tonight. I think, I guess we've had themes in the past, but not quite like this.
Not so dedicated.
Huh?
Not such a dedicated theme in the past.
Right, exactly.
Like spot on.
Yeah.
We're getting very granularly specific.
I can't even say that. So
easy for you to say.
I do want to. There's a couple things I wanted to mention before we get into that. I did watch a couple things that I think people might want to check out. I watched a movie called Saint Maud.
Oh yeah, I'd heard about it.
Yeah, and it was good. It was a good one. It was definitely a slow burn, produced by A24. And if you're familiar with A24, they're usually pretty art house horror, you know. I believe Hereditary might have been an A24 movie. I'm not sure.
I think it is.
Yeah. But Saint Maud, it's about this woman who is a nurse for a woman who is terminally ill. I'm assuming she has cancer. I don't think it ever specifies, but I believe it looks like she has cancer. She wears wigs and everything, and she's terminally ill. She's going to die. And Maud, who she calls herself anyway, she is very religious and takes it upon herself. She wants to save. Not just be the nurse for this woman, but to save her soul. And there are a lot of religious imagery. You're not sure how much of it is real, how much of it is going on in the head of Maud. I think the ending kind of tells you what's really happening, but it's a pretty powerful ending. It's definitely slow burn. If you're not into a slow burn kind of film, then you probably won't care for it too much. But the it's a bit of a character study for a while. I would compare it in some ways, up to a certain point anyway, I would compare it to Joker almost, in a way. It's not in an overt way. It's not something that you obviously say, oh, this is a lot like Joker, but they're similar characters in a way. And, but something, it takes a turn in the last act, that was pretty horrifying. And, it was a good one. I liked it. Saint Maud. And I believe I watched that it's on Epix, I think. And I believe it's for rent too. But they had it on Amazon. You get a 7-day trial for Epix, and it's like a free trial for 7 days. So what's the harm? You just sign up for it and then cancel it before the end, unless you really want to keep Epix. But I definitely recommend that. And we finished binging a show on HBO Max called Search Party, which I think I talked about last time. We had begun watching it and we finished all four seasons or three or four seasons, whatever it is. And it's really good. It's definitely a comedy. It's not, you know, I mention it now because it's not a horror, but it definitely has elements of horror in it it's really a dark comedy, and it is absolutely hilarious. So I highly recommend that. And then my last thing I want to mention before, well, you can say whatever you have to say. I'm holding this up for Joe, but my wife got me this. It's like a poster, but it's a framed thing with it's got 100 horror movies on it. And from way back, silent era, all the way up to just last year, 2020, it's got an Invisible Man on it from 2020. And it's not scratch and sniff, but it's like a scratch thing. Like,
imagine how much cooler it would be if it was scratch and sniff?
Oh, if it was scratch and sniff and you got to smell something from the movie.
Like Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre would be a whole different thing. But it's sort of like a, It's sort of like, I guess, like a lottery ticket. You scratch off parts of it. The movies that you've seen, you scratch them off. And then underneath it, it's got like an artist's representation of parts of the movie. So there's quite a few movies I haven't seen, but most of them are in like the older movies, like silent era and movies from like the 1930s. But
have you seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that. And I'd seen Nosferatu. And, you know, I've seen those classics, but there were a few like The Phantom Carriage, which is one of the early horror movies. I'd not seen that one. And I still haven't seen Cat People. And then
I actually have that on my DVR just sitting there right now. Just someday I'll get around to watching it. But
Cat People?
Yeah, 1942.
And there was a 1980s, I think, remake of that. But so anyway, that was the most awesome Valentine's gift I think anyone could ever give anyone at all.
I couldn't agree more. I think that there was a huge surge of those scampering over Facebook for the past few months, because I know I got my wife a similar type of thing, but it was a map of the United States, and you're supposed to cross, you know, scratch off the states you've been to.
Oh.
And then there's like, you know, national parks, and there's different movies, you know, like romantic comedies and the AMI's top 100 or whatever it is, AFI. Mm. But yeah, that one's, I hadn't seen that one. That one's awesome.
Interesting. Yeah, this one's fantastic. And if you want to check it out, I believe it's on Pinterest, one of those websites on there.
Etsy?
Where people, Etsy maybe. Yeah, Etsy.
Yeah.
So
Google it, you lazy Google bastards. Figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out on your own, people. I can't.
Yeah, we can't solve all your problems.
Exactly. So anyway, yes, I definitely recommend Search Party and what was the other thing that I said? Oh, Saint Maud. I think that's. Have you seen anything recently?
Actually, I did. There was a new film that just came onto Netflix last week called Red Dot. It's a Swedish film, all in subtitles. Again, I cannot get over in the past year just how many movies I've watched with subtitles.
Yeah.
Like 10 years ago, I never would have even found one. Now they're just there everywhere. But it's very interesting. It's about a younger couple. You kind of start off with their right into about their year and a half way into their marriage. A lot of flashbacks into them, you know, just dating and stuff like that. And when they first got together and they first got engaged, you know, everything was fantastic. Now they've been married for a year and a half and everything's just sort of fizzled. And so they decide they want to, well, actually they find out that they're pregnant. And so they want to take a camping trip up to go see the Northern Lights to sort of rekindle their relationship. And along the way, things happen. People accidentally bump into other people's cars and forget to leave notes and, you know, that whole rigmarole. So anyway, they're camping outside trying to watch the Northern Lights one night. And then all of a sudden they notice a little red dot inside their tent. And it is the red dot that's made by a laser scope, and someone begins to start hunting them. It's a very thrilling movie. You get onto the edge of your seat quite quick. There's the chases and like who's shooting at them, and you suspect it's one person the whole time, and turns out it's not. That which brings me to my only fall of this movie, which is I really don't care for it when it's almost to the end of the film and then they introduce something. Oh yeah, well we forgot to tell you that this happened ages ago, and had I known that, I would have thought, oh, well, that was the killer probably all along. But they introduced this story bit, you know, way too close to the end. But, you know, by that time, the movie's already done and sort of wrapped up, and you just kind of figure out their motivation. But overall, it was good. Again, I can't believe how many times I've said this in the past 12 episodes, but if you don't mind reading subtitles, this one is a very good movie. And again, that's Red Dot, and it's on Netflix.
Yeah, that's one I've been meaning to watch. That one and the one that you talked about last time or the time before, Frozen.
I want to watch both of those.
Yeah. Although I'm surprised that they named it Frozen, given that that Disney movie is so, you know.
They named it Frozen first. That movie came out three years before Disney stole it, like they do almost everything.
I can't believe they didn't have the foresight to see that Disney was going to name the movie Frozen.
I can't believe people named this movie Red Dot, because you know Disney's going to have a movie called Red Dot in 3 or 4 years.
And it's going to be the cutest thing.
Yeah, it will. It'll just be adorable.
All right. Well, Joe, tonight we have a kind of theme, I guess, and we were going to talk about slumber party picks, because last time we had discussed the movie The Dark and the Wicked, and
amongst other classic films.
Yeah, Drive-In Massacre would not be one of my picks, Joe, for a sleepover. Not unless you're having a sleepover with a whole lot of people you don't really like very much, then actually that would be perfect.
The intention of the sleepover was to actually put you to sleep, this is something your parents would have came in and said, enough, you guys are watching Drive-In Massacre, I've had it. And then you'd be out in like 10 minutes.
Actually, to tell you the truth, Joe, there is one reason to do it, and that would be if it's the right crowd. You know what I mean? Like if it's you and me, maybe Dave Bondi or a couple of our friends like that, that might not be bad, because there would be some appreciation of just how bad it is and making fun of it and having fun while we were doing that. So
close friends, an 8-ball of cocaine, and this movie, and it's a Friday night.
Oh, yeah. You and I with the 8-balls. okay, so I guess what I wanted to say is that there are a lot of movies that I think of with sleepovers, and some of them are a little obvious. So I tried to find some that weren't like obvious. When I was a kid, I always wanted to watch Halloween every sleepover. Sure. So I'm not going to include that, just because it's one that everybody has seen. It is a favorite, and it is one that, you know, if you're with other people who are big fans of it, then they don't mind watching it every now and then or regularly, like me. But generally speaking, I tried to steer around to ones that aren't necessarily off the beaten path, but I don't even know if I'd call them deep.
The hidden gems.
I had a methodology behind me. I feel like for me, the first movie of the night should be something basically just fun. You know, everybody's just getting together. It doesn't maybe necessarily have to be one that everyone's paying attention to, because it's not that scary, you know, and it's one that everybody can laugh and have a good time with. Right. And then the second one, I think, should be the scary one. That's when everybody's kind of settled down. Right. And you're ready to just, like, you know, you got your footy pajamas on. And you've got the pillows, you got the popcorn, everything. Everyone's ready to settle down. We've all chatted and talked and had our time. Now it's time to sit down and get scared. And then
you must make really good mixtapes. Because you put so much thought into it.
I have. Well, yeah. I think you have to put some thought into it.
Yeah.
And then the third movie of the night, by this time, it's getting late. People are getting a little punch drunk or whatever, or literally drunk. Maybe it depends on what age they are. And you've already watched your scary one. You're ready for maybe something to lighten the mood a little bit. So the third one, I think, is more for the hardcore fans and should be maybe a cult classic or something that is maybe a little, if you're talking about a franchise, a few movies into the franchise, you know, the weird ones, the B movies. That's what I was thinking. How about you?
I would never have given it that much thought, because we would just go to the local video store. Go to the convenience store, grab whatever garbage junk food you can get your hands on, and then you got to stop by the, you know, whatever the local Beta and VHS store had. And, you know, they'd have a small, limited horror section, and you're just drooling over the eye candy of these sleeves of the covers of the DVD cases. And you just grabbed whatever you possibly could, whatever you hadn't seen already. Obviously, yeah. If there was something good that you and whoever else was going to be at the party had just came out and you hadn't seen yet, that was definitely a number one pick. But then you always had to have, like, a classic. Now, I agree. I'm the same way with you. If you want to have us talk about, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th, the obvious ones, then, you know, that's a different one. That's a different show. Go tune that in somewhere else. We find the hidden gems. We bring those to light. Those are the deep cuts, as I say, that I would want to, you know, I would want to show a movie that would scare the crap out of my friends that they hadn't not only seen, but hadn't even heard of. You know, this is how you make a cult classic, is, you know, these teenage sleepovers like that. So I agree. We're on the same page.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm going to do is just, I don't know if you want to do this too, but I picked three for a sleepover. A little marathon, really fully intending that the first one would just be something playing in the background while we're chatting maybe and sort of watching, but also maybe eating some pizza or whatever. The second one is we're all ready to focus and it's supposed to be scary. And the third, like I said, is just a goofy B movie or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk about a couple of the ones that didn't make my cut. Right. But could have filled one of those spots. So for my first spot, the one that is, fun and maybe not one that we're necessarily paying attention to all that much because we've all seen it, maybe would be A Nightmare on Elm Street, for instance. I think it's scary when you first saw it, but who hasn't seen that? And anybody coming to my sleepover will have already seen that plenty of times. So I pick that one maybe, or maybe a horror comedy that would just be something light for earlier in the evening, like Spontaneous, which is a movie I just saw last year, and it was on my top 10 list of horror films from from 2020. It's a great romantic horror comedy. Excellent movie. So I thought something like that would be good for that first slot. And then for the scary movie, I was thinking something like The Conjuring, although most people saw The Conjuring or Paranormal Activity, maybe, It Follows. If people hadn't seen those would be the types that I think would be really creepy, you know, to me. And then for the third movie, I was almost going to pick this one, Terrifier. Do you remember this? Did you see this?
Oh, yeah. A creepy clown.
Yeah, the creepy clown. I can't remember the clown's. Oh, Art the clown, right? Mm-hmm. That one would be one that I think a lot of people, especially people who aren't necessarily all that into horror, probably haven't seen. And there's some shocking things in it. That would be a late night one.
Oh, God, yeah. I hadn't even heard of that movie up until maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it only came out a few years ago. That was one that it had a danger to it. Like, you weren't sure what was going to happen, especially there was one scene. The girl is kind of cut in half and he's got her hanging there or whatever.
One of the few scenes that I constantly remember from that film.
Yeah, yeah. And there was just a sickness in that movie that I can't say it was perfect. There were a lot of, I mean, I felt like it had 100 different endings. But it definitely had a creepiness. I know they're supposed to be bringing out a sequel too. So what were some of yours that didn't necessarily make your final
cut? Well, oddly enough, I was shocked that the first movie that you brought up was exactly, I mean, I didn't put it on my list, but Nightmare on Elm Street. Is hands down, that was like the go-to sleepover movie. If you hadn't seen it, you had to see it. If you had seen it, you were so anxious to see it again. Mm-hmm. Because it just sets the tone for the rest of the evening, for the rest of the sleepover.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have kids that just are not going to go to sleep all night long because of that film.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's a good one for you know, when I think of sleepovers, obviously we're thinking of ourselves when we're that age, right? You know, sure. Teenagers or whatever. So that is still probably the perfect sleepover movie, because usually when kids are become teenagers, they probably haven't seen that one yet because it's pretty scary. So you're talking around 12 or 13, you know, kids really start having sleepovers where they want to watch horror movies.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong with the classics. You know, right. You can, the first handful of Friday the 13th are good. The first two Halloweens are also great. You know, if you had a sleepover and your three movies were Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Friday the 13th, you know, great. Check them off your list. You're done.
Yep. Yeah. It's still a really good one for that.
My actual one that made my list would be Sleepaway Camp. I absolutely loved watching that movie when I was a kid. I never really went away to a camp like that, you know, like a sleepaway camp type thing, but a handful of my friends did, and they really related to it. But still, I mean, it's so creepy from the very beginning of the film all the way up to the very, especially the very end. The opening scene with the boat, the family that gets killed with the boating accident, and then the creepy mother that's adopted. Oh, just the mother alone. You could do a whole series on just that mother. But it's just such a fantastic film to be watching with your buddies on a, you know, at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. That just creeped everybody out. And then there was always one kid that had already seen the movie. And when they were coming to the final climax ending of the very, you know, last 2 minutes of the film, he was the one that was like, all right, everybody, you got to pay attention. You got to pay attention. This is the best part. You got to watch this. Make sure you're watching this. And then you'd see the final reveal, and oh, it's just such a memorable movie. So that's how I would start off a sleepover right now. Sleepaway Camp.
That is, yeah, that final reveal is, and you know, that actress, she's in a lot of horror conventions, and she always poses with that look, that creepy look,
yes.
Which now is kind of funny, but when you're younger, that was scary to me.
Weird, like, yeah, bizarre.
But then I watched it, you know, a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, how was I scared by this? But, so my first that I would show on a night, for my taste should be a fun one. And, I feel like it should be a classic, and I feel like it should be one personally that people aren't going to be paying attention for the first one. If you start it at 7 or 8 o'clock, no one's paying attention. Right. So I picked Shaun of the Dead. It's a fun one. You don't have to be paying attention the whole time. You can watch the funny parts. You can watch the parts that, you know, that are exciting, or you get to a certain set piece and you're like, oh, this is funny or whatever. Right. And, but you can still kind of have your evening at the same time. So I think it's a good warm up. It's a good one to get people going, and they'll start to, as it gets more serious and gets into more of the drama and the action, and people are dying and all of that towards the end, because it gets pretty dramatic towards the end. It's funny and everything, but it gets pretty darn serious, that last act. And so, that movie I thought would be a perfect one to kind of get people then geared up for it, because as the movie's going on, people start settling in, watching it, and then it warms you up for the next one. So that was my
background type movie that's, you know, right, setting the mood or establishing like a lead in.
Yeah. A lead in, a warm up.
Yeah. No, that's a great pick.
Yeah.
On a side note, have you seen the rest of the Cornetto trilogy?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I liked them, but not nearly as much as Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. I still think World's End is probably my second favorite, then Hot Fuzz. But anyway, love Edgar Wright films. Yeah. Baby Driver's hence not one of my favorite films. Anyway, my second movie, my actual, like, you know, you've gotten people's attention, they're done screwing around, they're all settled in, and they're like, all right, let's watch a film, is Return of the Living Dead. And This one, I can't tell you how many sleepovers I had when I was a kid, and we had to pull this one out again and again and again. And I just rewatched this last week, and it's almost like I'm watching it again with brand new eyes. It's such a fantastic film. And again, featuring, as we didn't know in the past, but we certainly do now, Lene Quigley of Davenport, Iowa. She plays Trash in that film. She's the one. Yep. And that was the other very important thing for all of us boys, adolescents. You know, these movies had to have some sort of nudity in it. You know, it went hand in hand. Like, I want to get the crap scared out of me, and I want to see boobies. That it was just, this movie had them both in spades. It was fantastic. We all loved when the canister opened up and that main creature got out, and, you know, them and the punk rockers in this film, it was constantly scaring you and just constantly getting out of hand. And then, you know, the rain starts and there's more zombies and they're calling for more ambulances, and oh dear God, you're reeling with excitement, going, where's this going to end? And you kind of find out, yeah, it doesn't, which is great, you know, an open-ended ending. Consequently, I made the huge mistake, because I've only seen Return of the Living Dead. I have not seen parts 2 or 3 or whatever else is beyond that. But I tried one of those 7-day free trials of, I think it was Cinemax, and only because it had Return of the Living Dead part 3 in it. And that is just, oh, what an insult to the franchise. It's so unbelievably terrible. Totally a late 80s, early 90s movie. It's just not watchable. I was like, you know, I'm getting this movie as part of a free trial, and I'm still like fast forwarding through it because I'm so bored with it. And yeah, they really insulted the franchise. They really should have. Like I said, I've never seen number 2, but I don't know now that I want to, if they're going to get that bad. But they do make references to all of the movies in the franchise. They go back to the, you know, the original black and white, but yeah, just stick with the Return of Living Dead, and I think that would definitely grab everybody's attention for a sleepover.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. It's always that's a fun one. And it would be a good one for a sleepover. I completely agree. My second one, which I feel should be the one that people would find scary. And in order for it to really be scary, it also has to be one that not many people have probably watched. And so, horror fans would know this one pretty well, probably, but other people might not. And that would be Hell House LLC. That is for my money, the found footage film. It's just a genre that I think you're very much in the moment, right? It's a hard one to come back to and watch again. Like when you saw Paranormal Activity, I was there in the moment. I was there with it. Same thing for the Blair Witch Project and some of those movies like that. You're in the moment with those movies and you're right there with them through the whole thing. By the time you get to the end, it's not, the rewatchability is not off the charts, you know, with these movies. It's not like The Shining or Halloween where you can watch it over and over, or even something like The Conjuring or whatever. But that first time you watch it, you're right there with it. And it's very much real time in the moment with these movies. And that, I think, is perfect for a sleepover. There's some really, really creepy moments in this movie. And they made a couple sequels that weren't very good, but the first one was really, really good. And so and it's one, like I said, that probably most of the people at your sleepover will not have seen. So that is Hell House LLC. And I think that's from 2016 or 2017, maybe something like that. It's a good one.
See, okay. On to my last movie of the night. Although I do have an honorable mention, but the movie I would probably put on last, and I don't know that we covered this while we were recording or not, but I'm picking movies that I would have watched when I was like in late grade school, early high school, anything that was available then. So if my list seems dated, that's what I was going for. So, but my last one, I don't want to call it a sleeper, and it is more of a popular film than the others, but Jamie Lee Curtis in Prom Night would be what I would put at the end of the evening. It was, I just rewatched this just so I could make sure I wasn't speaking out of turn, but I believe the scariest thing in the entire movie is Leslie Nielsen trying to do the hustle with Jamie Lee Curtis on the dance floor during the high school dance. It was such a shock to see Leslie Nielsen having such a minute role in this film and being just totally deadpan straight. But, you know, it's a typical, you know, high schoolers are getting picked off one at a time. And I'm going through the IMDb app while I'm watching this, looking at the dates that these characters, the actors that play these characters, what are their birth dates? And sure enough, like Jamie Lee Curtis, I think was 22. And she was supposed to be playing like a 17 or 18 year old in high school. You know, it's her senior prom. And they cast like everybody 5 years down easily. You know, I think Jamie Lee Curtis might have been the youngest one on the cast. Some of these other girls were like 24 and 25. But you know, you got suspension of disbelief. Who cares? You're watching a horror film. And again, there's that full frontal in there that was really important to us, you know, teenage boys. But overall, it was a good film. If you really like black sparkly ski masks, this movie is fantastic because that's what the killer wore. It was weird. He's like entirely in black, but his face mask sparkles. His ski mask. It was an odd choice, but there's good kills. There's good special effects. There's fantastic choreography. There's a light up dance floor and everything. But it's worth a watch. Although I gotta say, I put this movie last in the evening because if you were tired, I guess, and you didn't want to make it to the end, I honestly don't think you missed a whole lot with the big reveal at the end of the movie. The fun of this movie is the kills throughout. So anyway, that's how I would top off the sleepover, was with Prom Night.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I haven't seen that one in quite some time, so I need to revisit that one for sure. But that's a good late night one. I think you'll find that mine is similar. I did choose a Friday the 13th film, just because my memory of doing sleepovers was finding one of the Friday the 13th movies, playing on cable or HBO or whatever late at night. And it was usually, you know, down series, one of the down series ones. But I chose Friday the 13th Part 3, and I just watched this one. I revisited it the other day because I was kind of bouncing back and forth between this one and Part 4, Part 5, Part 6, or Part 2, which Part 2 is probably my favorite of the Friday the 13th movies. I think it's got Jason, though without the mask yet. He's wearing a bag and overalls, so it's kind of hillbilly Jason. And but it's not his mom, you know. I mean, the first one, of course, is his mom, and but it's actually Jason, and he's
spoiler alert.
It's, yeah, his mom. Well, yeah. Hopefully, anybody listening to this has already watched the first. But this one is great because it's goofy, it's campier than Part 2, but there's some good kills in it, and. It was made to be 3D. It was actually Friday the 13th Part 3 3D, you know. And so, and you can see the obvious attempts to use 3D. Like, people will be holding something up, like a, you know, a stick or something like that, straight at the camera, you know. And there was a lot of stuff done straight to the camera so that they could take advantage of the 3D. I never got to see it in 3D. I'd love to, if there's ever a screening of it in 3D sometime, I'd love to check it out, because it did seem to me like there'd be some good shots. That one shot that he did with the it's like a, not an arrow, but it was like a dart gun or something like that. He shoots and it goes straight at you, straight at the screen. I thought that was a cool shot. There's some neat
harpoon.
Yeah. Well, a harpoon could be something you throw too, right?
No, that would be a spear.
Well, no, I think they call it, don't they call them harpoons? They used to kill whales with. Anyway, never mind.
It's a harpoon. Okay.
Yeah. Or what did I call it?
I don't even remember it.
It doesn't. Anyway.
Okay.
I like the set pieces in this. I thought there was a good twist at the end that sort of brought back something that happened in the first one. And the use of the barn. I thought the biker gang was probably the worst biker gang that ever existed. They were dressed up in the most ridiculous costumes with like chains, like not cool chains, but just chains, like chains that they'd be working with, you know? So I really like Friday the 13th part 3. You get to know the characters a little bit. I did notice that all of the females basically look the same. They all have brown hair, and they all kind of look like Princess Leia. So Carrie Fisher, in case you didn't know who that Princess Leia was. But anyway.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Carrie Fisher is Princess Leia.
You may not have known that.
Yeah.
So that was my third pick. I think it would be a good late night one. It would be, you know, a lot of the kids nowadays would be they've finished Hell House. They've gotten scared. It would be a good, if Shaun of the Dead was your warm up, then Friday the 13th and Hell House LLC is your workout, then Friday the 13th part 3 would be a good cool down. And the kids who aren't interested in watching a third movie could be texting or doing whatever or going to sleep while the hardcore fans are watching Friday the 13th part 3.
So if there was a fourth movie, you know, when it's basically you and I are still awake, I would have put on Peter Jackson's Dead Alive.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever watch that with us in college? Mm-hmm. The only reason it didn't make my list. Okay. One of my old college roommates is the one that introduced me to that movie. And otherwise I would have put it on my original list, but I wasn't really having sleepovers, at least not with other guys in college. So, but Dead Alive was another fantastic film.
Technically you were, because you had roommates. So, sort of. Well,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, we did numerous nights. We'd throw on something like Peter Jackson's Dead Alive and oh my God, what a disgusting film. Yeah. Especially the lawnmower at the very end. It's really the most effective way to get through an entire house full of zombies. So, that's another classic I would put up there easily. So,
yeah, no, that was a really good one. All right, Joe, I don't have any more movies, do you?
I'm plumb out of movies.
Well, then that brings us to the next segment, the final segment of this episode, and that is a
confessional.
A what?
The confessional?
A confessional, yes. A ghost story, Joe. Now, this one is set not too far from you, Joe, in an area of Illinois, actually outside Equality, Illinois, which is ironic, which you will see why it's ironic, because this one is the Hickory Hill Mansion. And actually it's listed here on this website as being Harrisburg, Illinois, but I also have it listed under Equality, Illinois. So, and anyway, Harrisburg, are you familiar with Harrisburg?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
This is like Shermer, Illinois again.
Yeah. It's
we're sure it exists.
Well, or Haddonfield, Illinois, which doesn't exist.
Yeah. There's another one. Yeah.
But this, I believe, is in Southern Illinois, and Illinois is a long state. Not nearly as long as California, but it is a long state. So Southern Illinois is quite different from Northern Illinois. Southern Illinois.
You might say they're polar opposites of each other.
They pretty much are. It's a little more Missouri in Southern Illinois. So
this is where I play the banjo music.
Ding 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 ding. Ding. All right. Yes, that would be a good place for that.
Yeah.
So, Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there was a time in our nation when we had slaves, and unfortunately, and fortunately, we were able to fight a war You should look this up, Joe, if you're not aware of it. We fought a war called the Civil War to end slavery and free all the slaves, right?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, and it was a good idea, and it worked through much bloodshed. But there were some people who they weren't real keen on slaves being free, and some of them went so far as to capture escaped slaves and send them back. And this process was called the reverse railroad, right? What was the hidden railroad or underground railroad?
Underground railroad.
The underground railroad. Well, this is called
the Shanghai.
Basically, yeah. But well, no, the underground railroad was where there was a line of houses and safe houses where they would get slaves to freedom, send them up to the north and eventually really up to Canada. Well, there were people called slave hunters who would go up into the north and look for these escaped slaves and send them back through a process called the reverse underground railroad. Well, this house, the Hickory Hill Mansion, was one of those places where they kept slaves for a time up in their attic. And it was a very sad story, very bloody, gross story. This is a national monument, this place. And they give tours of it and talk about the history of the people who were kept up in this attic. During the day, tourists have felt a growing chill, Joe, as they climb the steps into the attic. Some have heard shuffling feet. And this is where I'm assuming you're going to put a sound effect.
Insert shuffling feet here.
I took your advice last time, Joe.
Note to self, yeah.
Yeah, note to self. I've got to find something that has sounds. Whimpering cries.
Glass shatters.
Yeah. Shuffling feet, whimpering cries, and they're filled with an uneasy feeling. Now, that's not sound effect capable, that one. So I don't think there's a sound for uneasy feeling other than maybe, ooh.
I'll figure something.
You know, Joe, in all of our sound effects, though, you've yet to find one of a voice of someone go, you know, like a ghostly disembodied voice.
Oh, the Scooby-Doo voice.
What?
The Scooby-Doo ghost.
Well, no, more like this. Oh.
I'm just gonna play you doing that now.
Okay. So, other visitors have not been treated so leniently by the presences there. In the 1920s, an exorcist by the name of Hickman Whittington went up into the attic to try to rid it of its entities. Only after a short time, he ran from the mansion and hours later died of fright. Well, it was a heart attack, but it was attributed to the fright that he took while he was in. I mean, this is not a coincidence, Joe. Perhaps having experiences that some Marines had. Yes, Joe, in 1966, two veteran Marines decided to spend the night in the infamous attic. The full treatment, as they call it, started at 1 o'clock in the morning when their kerosene lamp started to flicker. And there's a possibility for a sound effect there, Joe. You could fire flickering. Suddenly,
fire doesn't make a lot of it crackles.
A crackle, maybe not a kerosene lamp. Never mind.
Yeah.
don't do that. Suddenly, okay. A terrible moan reverberated and shook the attic walls. Ooh, there you go.
Thank God, I've got that Matt audio drop of him.
Ooh. Well, this one's going to be harder because a cacophony of human voices speaking unintelligible words assaulted their ears while ghostly figures swirled and danced around them. Their only source of light, the kerosene lamp, then blew out. Blood-curdling screams rang out all around them, and they were filled with anxiety and panic, which inspired them to fly down the steep stairs and make a quick exit. These are two Marines, too, Joe.
Yeah.
These are not guys. And in 1966, they probably had some combat experience. So these guys who had gone through combat, they could not spend an entire night. They couldn't spend more than an hour in this place, it looks like.
You think we could find those two so I can ask him how to spell cacophony?
No. The Sisks, whose family had owned the mansion for 80 years, were the owners of the mansion and lived there while operating a museum. They stayed on the first and second floor and never went up to the attic, as they respected the entities there. They were interviewed by psychic investigators Richard Weiner and Nancy Osborne for their book, Haunted Heartless. What are you laughing about?
Richard Weiner. Dick Weiner.
I guess so, yeah. And Nancy. Yeah. Richard, let's call them Richard and Nancy. Are you familiar with the book Haunted Heartland, Joe?
No, I'm not.
No. Well, it's a great ghost story book, by the way. And it actually has stories written throughout the Midwest. Haunted Heartland. Mrs. Sisk spoke of an icy chill that can be hang in the rooms of the mansion, even on hot days. Both she and her husband feel like they're constantly being watched by unseen presences. But they have learned to live with their entities, and the entities tolerate their presence. The house, from its hilltop position, is buffeted by winds. There you go. Is it just the wind rattling the windows and whipping under the eaves that creates a presence? Or do the voices of those doomed slaves still cry out in anguish? And why? Never mind. So I'm not going to finish that last sentence. So that is our ghost story for the week. Please, people, do please take pity on us.
Do yourselves a favor.
Do yourselves a favor and send us your ghost stories, okay? We really miss the listener ghost stories, and they seem to be easier to do sound effects for Joe.
We will even pay somewhere upwards of between $0 and $500.
Yes, yeah, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there.
Well,
or a sticker.
A sticker. That's really what it's going to be. Which that would be somewhere between $0 and $5.
They were very expensive stickers.
They were. And they're cool
stickers. They're high quality.
Yeah. They would look good on the back of a laptop.
Or a backpack or a,
or a car.
Water bottle. Or back window of your car.
Although they're a little small, you can't really read them. So I'd put them on the back of your laptop, and when you go to school, all the kids will say, "What's that?
What's that? Yeah. That's awesome."
Yeah. Sick. No, they say sick.
You gotta say that's awesome.
I think.
That's sick.
Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, or not next week, but in 2 weeks, we have a very special episode. We're going to be breaking down one of our favorite movies, possibly. It's right up there with maybe my favorite movie of all time, The Shining.
Here's Johnny.
Get ready. We may have a special guest helping us out. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping so to join us in this. And I think you guys are going to love hearing from this person.
We will discuss the book, the movie, the remake of the movie, the documentary Room 237, and the 37-minute short film done by Kubrick's daughter on the making of it. All five of those topics.
Yep.
I'm sure we'll get touched in one way or another.
We should.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it. I hope you guys a great week or 2 weeks, and we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.